beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, D.A., I'm thirsty, man. Can you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, D.A., what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
D.A., what's the silly permission to get in that mothership?
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, D.A.? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My co-worker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's D.A. on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live for the Quicken Loans Studios. National mortgage lender Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Coming up this hour on the show, the MLS Cup trophy had its best day ever.
Get on top of the guy and they'll do a lap dance.
Coming your way in about 18 minutes from now. Also, later on in the hour, sound check your best audio of the day, including a very contentious interview between our friend Jason LaCanfora and his report on Tom Coughlin perhaps debating whether to come back and coach the Jacksonville Jaguars versus a radio station in Jacksonville that was having none of that report. That comes your way as part of sound check later on in the hour. As always, we've got a toll-free line for you to dial us up as we've been discussing Kirk Cousins and John DeFilippo as DeFilippo gets fired as offensive coordinator in Minnesota midseason, the Ben Roethlisberger Steelers debacle on Sunday, and the 12 DAs of Christmas so far in hour number one, 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. Connect with us on Twitter as well, DA on CBS. Frank Clark is part of the new school of the Seattle Seahawks. Clark was drafted in 2015 after their Super Bowl championship and after their Super Bowl loss to the New England Patriots. So Frank Clark is part of the Seahawks new school. And after the win over the Vikings on Monday night, 21-7, ostensibly that's what got John DeFilippo fired, Clark took aim at a former Seahawks great. Seattle is now 8-5, can clinch a playoff spot by beating the 49ers coming up on Sunday in Santa Clara. Richard Sherman had called out the Seahawks as a middle-of-the-road team, and very obviously there's still a lot of animosity between Sherman and that organization. I think Richard Sherman resents the way that he was treated by the end, resents the way the defense was kind of allowed to disintegrate because of free agency, resented the, in his mind, the coddling of the quarterback Russell Wilson. And so very obviously Richard Sherman has not so fond memories or thoughts right now, emotions surrounding the Seahawks. Clark said, quote, "He's not in this locker room no more. So his opinion doesn't really matter. They've got some problems over there in San Fran that he needs to be worried about. This is my team now. This is my defense. Richard Sherman, his era is over here. If he's got anything to say about our defense, he can say it on the field at the end of the day. We're 1-0 against Richard Sherman right now. We are 1-0 against the 49ers this year. Our plan is to be 2-0. So we're going into that stadium next week with our pure aggression. We're going to stop that run, and we're going to have some fun on third downs." End of quote. I applaud Frank Clark. Look, Frank Clark has had his fair share of baggage coming out of college. But this is where I think Frank Clark plants his flag and he's saying the right thing and doing the right thing. You see, it is time to turn the page in Seattle, and they did, and they're better for it. They're 8-5, and barring a collapse, they're going to be in the playoffs, and they look like a pretty dangerous out, a pretty tough out, and a difficult opponent as a number 5 seed, perhaps, in the playoffs. I mean, if you're the Cowboys or you're the Bears, do you want to see Seattle come into your house as a division winner? I would say no. Certainly not looking for that. You'd much rather have the Panthers or the Vikings or if the Packers slipped in there or something like that. I mean, Mraz is still holding out hope that the New York Giants make the playoffs at 8-8. Would you rather have the Giants come into town What are the Seattle Seahawks? I know your answer there. Richard Sherman is the old guy that's still talking about something he doesn't need to be talking about. And this is where we were just talking about how Mike Tomlin's strength can be his weakness, that he cuts a very imposing figure at a podium and he's kind of fearless in his comments, and that hurts him because he sometimes says too much. And I think that leads to players on his team saying too much. You know, I always thought it was ironic that Mike Tomlin got all bent out of shape that Antonio Brown went Facebook Live after the playoff game against Kansas City a couple of years ago, saying, hey, man, you got to keep this in-house. You can't do that. We got to keep it quiet around here. Where Mike Tomlin loves a microphone. Mike Tomlin is too transparent. Mike Tomlin says too much. So how can you be Tomlin and say, hey, over here? You can't be talking about that. We got to keep it in-house when the rest of the season you don't do that. You've built a culture where these guys are allowed to be themselves. I think the same thing in Seattle. Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor and the Legion of Boom, that extended to other guys like Michael Bennett and other players of the defensive line, Cliff Averill, etc. Those guys were, they were encouraged to use their emotion. They were an emotional team. They used that edge. Then they used it to spite everyone else and to trash talk and to become one of the most fearsome defenses of their era. And Richard Sherman trash talked his way into America's households and exploded into a household name because of his emotional outburst in Aaron Andrews' post-game interview and other moments. And that was an edge the Seahawks created to their benefit. But now Richard Sherman talking about the Seahawks sounds pathetic. It sounds like you can't stop thinking about your ex. Richard Sherman is playing for a last place football team. He doesn't need to worry about the Seahawks anymore, but he can't stop because that's his identity. And Frank Clark, more power to him, saying, this is my defense. This is my locker room. I'm taking ownership of this. You know, through the void, somebody has to fill the void of leadership. And the Seahawks are better. They're better for cut and bait with that. And look, Earl Thomas isn't there anymore either. And when you think about it, there was so much resentment from so many corners of that locker room towards so many things. It was like when you go to work and you want to have a good day, but the guy next to you in the cubicle can't stop complaining about the boss. You're like, all right, I get it. I get it. All the complaints end up having a cumulative effect. It's draining. When you have people at work that can't stop complaining, it is draining. It doesn't help anybody. Nobody's completely thrilled with their lot at work and employment. But if you just keep complaining about it, it's a negative. So in Seattle, Richard Sherman resented Russell Wilson. And Earl Thomas resented the front office. And they all resented the coaching staff. And they all resented Daryl Bevell. And they all resented the play call at the end of the Super Bowl. And they all resented somebody there that nobody was happy. Nobody was appreciative. And I think down the line they will be. I think when they look back at what they accomplished together, they will be. But right now they're still in the middle of it. And Richard Sherman doesn't need to be talking about the Seahawks. They're way better than his Niners team is. And Sherman didn't have a lot of takers in the open market. He's old now. He's broken down now. So that Seahawks team did the best thing they could have done. And that was cut bait with the old guys and go forward with the new guys. And it didn't look so at the time. I know I've taken my swipes with the Seahawks. But now what you see is Richard Sherman looks pathetic, yapping about the Seahawks, not even on the Seahawks anymore. And Earl Thomas looked pathetic because he was battling about his franchise tag or his salary or his structure of his contract, and I want to be a Dallas Cowboy and come get me. He's not even playing, and the Seahawks are fine. Cam Chancellor's retired. The Seahawks are fine. Did that defense look much different on Monday night? Now, part of that is that the Vikings can't get out of their own way, and it's Kirk Cousins, but largely that Seahawks team is just fine without those dudes. So all this built-in resentment, I think, ended up having a negative effect. They all hated something that happened or someone, and they never played up to their potential, and now those guys are gone, and the Seahawks are 8-5, could end up being 11-5, 10-6, and being a playoff team that wins a road game in the postseason. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227, Twitter, DA on CBS. So, yesterday I saw this story come across my social media feed. I said, oh, great. This is just wonderful, just perfect. Tampa Bay Rays had had plans for a new stadium in Ybor City. If you've been to the Tampa, St. Pete, Clearwater area, you know Ybor City is awesome. Bunch of bars, bunch of restaurants, walking area, walking district, much better than where the Trop is in St. Pete. You can't walk anywhere, can't do anything around there. Everything closes down for the retirees at 6 o'clock. So going into Ybor City would be fantastic. But that new ballpark deal is dead. And this is what you always have to be worried about. In Oakland, when you see these shiny new renditions of a brand new ballpark and you go, wow, look at all that glass and look at those palm trees and look at that waterfront. This is going to be great. You've got to realize that's not necessarily what's going to happen. The organization uses design corporations to design potential stadiums and then floats it out there to try to create the interest from a fan base or from a city so that they can then get the funding for it from a public tax standpoint. And same thing in Tampa. Look at this amazing concept ballpark we've got. Well, nobody had the money to pay for that. Rays didn't have the money. Tampa didn't have the money. Ybor City didn't have the money. Hillsborough County didn't have the money. Nobody had the money. Got to have the money. Need the money.
It's about the money. M-O-N-E-Y-D-A.
So because that window is now closed and they couldn't get the money, the Rays ballpark deal is dead, meaning the team's going to be at the Trop essentially until 2027, which is death.
You are a machine of death.
I've been to the Trop. I've seen the Trop. I've watched Rays games at the Trop. It's a disgrace. It's a disgrace. It is watching a baseball game in a BJ's wholesale club. It is dark. It is dim. It is gray. It is cement. It's just all the things you don't think about in baseball. It is not bright and light and vibrant and grass and blue skies and beer. No, it's a Costco. And now they get it for another 9 years. So the good news is, if you were rushing to St. Pete to make sure you saw the iconic catwalk, you've got more time. You've got more time. But for Rays fans, I wouldn't show up either. It's depressing. Mraz, you've been to a game at Tropicana Field, right?
Yes. It's
is it
the way you just described it is calling it a BJ's. I had never thought of it that way. You're right. It's kind of like a Home Depot, too. It's just cavernous, things hanging from the ceiling. It's a disaster.
It's a disaster.
Nothing to do.
I could say, honestly, it is the worst sporting experience of my life. I don't even care who wins, but going there's nothing fun about it.
And when you think about it, and I know a lot of people kill like clubs at stadiums and club seating, their version of a club down the left field line basically looks like a mall food court. And it's just next to a bullpen, and it's got the old-looking turf. It's a disaster. It's a disaster.
They got the fish tank with the stingrays in there.
There is nothing. And I can tell you, as an AL East fan of the Yankees, there is nothing to make you tune out on a Friday night in July more than the Yankees in Tampa. And it actually gives you a headache on TV watching a game there. Like, I'm just staring. It just looks awful.
It's amazing. When they splashed a can of paint, the yellow paint, on that air duct in left field, I'm like, wow, they really brighten things up around here. The air duct was yellow. I'm like, ooh, this looks good.
That stadium, let's not forget, used to house the Tampa Bay Lightning. It was the original Ice Palace. Tropicana Field was the Ice Palace, yes.
Is that right?
Yes. That was the original home of the Tampa Bay Lightning. That's how old and decrepit and gross that stadium is. A stadium built for hockey, more, it's not built for hockey, but a stadium that can house hockey shouldn't be housing an indoor baseball team all year long.
That's probably fair. That's a good line of demarcation. Remember, that stadium was built to lure the San Francisco Giants in the early 90s when they were trying to get a new ballpark at a Candlestick. That's how long ago this was built. A little outdated.
Yeah, gross. Get it out.
2027, you still have time to go see the Stingrays in the fish tank. Get them out. You got to get to Wrigley once in your lifetime. You got to get to Fenway once in your lifetime. Got to get to Lambeau Field once in a lifetime. And you got to get to the Trop before it closes in 2027. They become the Montreal Rays. You got to do it. When we come back here on the show, we'll jump into your phone calls as we've been talking about Kirk Cousins' flop, the Steelers, and what they do from here, having to face the Patriots and the Saints the next 2 weeks, and the Seahawks being better off without the old guys. And then also coming up next, did the MLS trophy just have its best day ever? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Little wet, little drippy, 24/7.
Fat pig.
Fat pig.
Selfish pig.
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 It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back. Happy Wednesday to you, everybody. DA here on CBS Sports Radio. Coming up next hour, Charles Davis is going to join us from the NFL on Fox. And Kay Adams from Good Morning Football, NFL Network. We'll do NFL with both Charles and Kay coming up next hour here on the show. And our toll-free line is brought to you by Geico. Great news. Quick way you could save money switching to Geico. Go to geico.com. 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Luke is in Boise, listening to 93.1. What's going on, Luke?
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about Richard Sherman and, more importantly, Pete Carroll taking a 4-12 predicted team to potentially an 11-win team. I mean, this is unreal, and I think he deserves to be considered for Coach of the Year. Just wanted to hear your thoughts.
I think he should be in that conversation as well, because I certainly thought the Seahawks would take a major step back this season, and they're locked into a playoff spot, and they're getting better at the right time. They're getting better as the season goes along. So I would agree he deserves consideration for it. I think it's really interesting because the Seahawks seem to have all of their personality ripped away when Chancellor and Thomas and Sherman were gone, and yet they're a different personality, but they're winning football games. Joe tweets, DA, the Seahawks are a paper tiger. Look at their record against winning teams. But Sherman does need to shut the bleep up. You know, I think that the Seahawks are right where the Seahawks should be. They've beaten teams around who they are, which is not the great teams of the NFL, but the teams that are right around the playoffs. I don't think there's a bad loss on their docket, except maybe losing to the Broncos in week number one. But the Broncos are kind of back in the wild card race. They lost to the Bears, who are going to win their division. They've lost to the Rams twice. They've lost to the Chargers, who was a 10-win team. Those are not bad losses. They've beaten the Cowboys. They've beaten the Packers, the Panthers, the Vikings. Those are all teams kind of vying for the wild card slot to the NFC. And the Cowboys, who have gotten much better recently as well. So I just think the Seahawks are kind of properly where they're supposed to be. If they're going to make the playoffs, they got to beat those other teams that are vying for the playoffs, and they've done so. Sean tweets, Pete Carroll has demonstrated smart, experienced leadership. He was losing control of the locker room and the future of the organization, reigned in the chaos, made difficult decisions many people, including myself, questioned, and ultimately found success again. Emotionally, it had gotten out of control in Seattle. And what had made them great started to rip them apart. And I think you're right. They felt internally, we can try to keep this reined in for as long as possible, but it's ripping us apart. If we move forward without it, we'll be better for it. We'll go through some growing pains. We might not be as talented on paper, but we need to do it. And they did it, and it's paying dividends. On Saturday, in MLS Cup, 73,000 people showed up at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, the home of the Falcons, to watch Atlanta United FC take out the Portland Timbers 2-0 for Atlanta's first professional championship since the 95 Braves, and Atlanta's first soccer championship in MLS in only year number two. They were an expansion team last season. Now, in Atlanta, this is one of the great sports stories in the country. What do we always say about Atlanta? Johnny come lately, bandwagon, apathetic sports town. Nobody cares, nobody cares, nobody cares. They're not diehard, they're not hardcore. They show up late, they leave early, they root for other teams. We always say, great college sports town, great SEC sports town, terrible professional sports town. And here is a soccer team. A soccer team. That not only bangs out that 70,000-seat stadium, but it's a better atmosphere than Falcons games. They're waving banners. They're chanting. They're singing. The crowd is into it. We had Taylor Twellman join us last week on the show before MLS Cup, and he said, when I go down to Atlanta, cabbies want to talk to me about soccer, not the Falcons. He goes, that's when I knew things changed in this town. It is one of the great stories, one of the great sports stories. And feeding on that, one of the great sports stories is that MLS Cup, that trophy, was brought out by Atlanta United FC players after the win, and they brought it to a strip club in Atlanta.
Get on top of the guy, and they'll do a lap dance.
They brought it to a place called Magic City, where magicians turn tricks. And video has surfaced of the trophy getting twerked on by these strippers. And I got to tell you, MLS has finally arrived. It's finally a mainstream sports league in the States. Because if you're going to bring the championship trophy out to get twerked on at a strip club while making it rain, now we're officially mainstream, baby. Pump up this music and just imagine Atlanta United FC bringing that trophy around, putting it on stage, and the girls just dropping it like it's hot.
She's a bad girl, Damon.
Please welcome Destiny. Destiny to the main stage. This is Destiny, and she'll be twerking with the MLS Cup. Congratulations, United FC. Atlanta's first championship. And Destiny, whoa, don't make it too hot down there on the stage.
All right, let's hear it for Destiny, everybody. Mraz, I got to say, best thing that could have happened to MLS.
The MLS, for the first time outside the DA show, is relevant nationwide. How many people 3 days later could tell you who played in the MLS Cup or who weren't watching soccer? You're getting photographs and videos of quite frankly, that trophy getting it dropped on. Hey, that MLS Cup now is relevant. That's Alex Ovechkin, you know, doing keg stands to another degree now. MLS Cup means something. That's pristine. You want that cup now. You want to bring it to your strip club back in your home city. This is going to be the strip club trophy. I love it.
Because you never see the Vince Lombardi trophy out of strip clubs. You never see the baseball. What do we call that thing?
The thing with a bunch of flags?
Yeah, the World Series trophy.
I don't know. The Clark Hunt Award.
Clark Hunt is the owner of the Chiefs.
I know. That's the AFC Championship, right?
Well, that's the Lamar Hunt Trophy.
Lamar Hunt Trophy Award. I don't know. What do we call the World Series thing?
Is it the Ford Frick Award?
No, that's the Broadcasting Award.
That's
from
right.
Fame.
That's the Hall of Fame's Broadcasting
Award. The Pat Kelly Trophy.
What is the baseball trophy? It's not the Bud Selig. It's a different commissioner. The Bowie Kuhn? We got nothing here, huh, guys?
The commissioner's trophy.
It's just the commissioner's trophy? There's no name on it?
It has a lame name. You can't bring it. And by the way, if you brought that to a strip club, it could end up an injury.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah,
that's very prickly.
That pokes a lot of things.
Yes, exactly. You can't have that in a strip club.
They never bring the baseball trophy anywhere. No one's ever like, I got to bring the baseball trophy to my hometown.
Hey, it's not easy to handle. It's a disaster. You don't even want it on a parade float.
We've declared the cup the best trophy for obvious reasons. The Vince Lombardi, I would say, is number two. The Larry O'Brien of the NBA is fine. It's not great, but I haven't even seen that at a strip club, ironically. The MLS Cup now getting twerked on. I agree. I think this is huge.
It elevates the league. It elevates the trophy. It elevates the game itself. I'm more prone to tune into the MLS Cup next year if I know at the end that trophy's ended up somewhere. Maybe it's ended up at a Kansas City strip club.
It's kind of the perfect city to win it and then bring it out to the strip club, Atlanta.
Yeah, I mean, my home away from home now, yes.
Like if Portland had won that, I don't know if Portland's known for its strip clubs.
Maybe not.
No.
Some grunge strippers there. I don't know.
The one organic strip club.
Right. The ones that look like Avril Lavigne. Strippers come out wearing Converses.
Oh my.
Beanie hats.
You only go for brunch.
So they just serve organic coffee there. So here's the question. Did any stripper that danced with the MLS Cup trophy know what the trophy was? Were they aware, like, oh, yeah, this is the soccer trophy?
Not a chance.
Not a chance.
But they knew leaving there, they probably told their friends, this was a good night of work. I made $300 and I danced with the soccer trophy.
I think it also says something that if you're going to go to a strip club to celebrate, that means the players now paid well enough to go make it rain after a championship. So it's not like these are minor league soccer players anymore. They've got a little bit of cash to throw around as strippers.
Yes. I mean, but how? Maybe Arthur Blank funded this trip to Magic City. I don't know. I don't know if the midfielder is, you know, making it rain out of a, you know, money shooting machine.
Can you play that first song you had, Bilotti? That was the perfect strip club song. I just want to pump that up, and I just want you to imagine the mothership dimming its lights. Atlanta United FC enjoying a party here aboard the Intergalactic Swag Party. And then us pumping up the music, Pete the Body Bilotti on the wheels of steel. And this is the music playing as Atlanta United FC dances with Jacob Wilkins and Robbie Rosenhaus here on the mothership as we celebrate the MLS Cup trophy.
Would we do this if we ever won a Marconi? Go to Larry Flint's Hustler Club up the block, bring everybody out.
Come on!
Like, come on!
Yeah, we're bringing the Marconi! Pump up the music, Bilotti!
Oh. And now he is twerking his face!
Weird.
Oh, I don't even have a job, Damien.
Weird.
All right.
Oh, okay.
He faked us all out.
That's a good, that's very good, Damien.
Good for her.
Well, I feel good and I'm doing well.
God bless.
Get Jody Mack away from the strippers. They're going to contract black lung.
4 to 5.
This is so gross. All right, when we come back here on the show, a little sound check. Your best audio of the day, including a contentious radio interview involving Jason Lockenfora, our NFL insider from CBS. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. We count down the 12 DAs of Christmas. Here's a moment that got stuck in the chimney.
I have always believed in the forlorn franchise and the tragedy-stricken fan bases finally having their day. But if I had callers that said we're going to go worst to first, I would scream them right off the airwaves. Don't do this to yourself. First! Worst to first! You went 0-16! I was none too pleased with Cleveland Browns fans that called me up and was predicting worst to first in winning the AFC North. To be honest, that doesn't seem so crazy right now. There is an actual path for the Browns to win the division, and we're now into mid-December. A stuck-in-the-chimney moment of the 12 DAs of Christmas. Welcome back, DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. Remember that the DA show is watchable every single day on your device. Whatever device that you want to listen or watch it on, you can do so at watchda.com. The best of video clips are also available on YouTube. So go there and watch the best of clips every single day. And all of the 12 DAs of Christmas are available on YouTube as well. Just search 12 DAs 2018. So, seems like you guys were very happy with that last strip club segment, which I could understand because I know you guys very well. Dixieland Dan tweets, dude, I need to buy Pete the Body a beer. that absolute banger of a strip club song. If you put a wig on Mraz, he could double as a fourth string stripper because he has more chest than most women I've seen.
Runaway train, never look back.
I need that song again, Bilotti. Pump up the song again here because people want it. Reed Phillips tweets, all right, I need a full mix from Pete the Body on SoundCloud ASAP. This is the DA Show strip club mix. All that was missing was, yeah, you like that big boy. Pump it up, Bilotti. Pump it up. I need this. Louder.
You like that big boy.
She's a bad girl, David.
You like that big boy.
Get on top of the guy and they'll do a lap dance.
I'm not a large woman. Oh, I just like to eat.
She's a bad girl, David.
Oh, DA, it's like an overnight sensation over chicken pesto.
Get on top of the guy and they'll do a lap dance.
You like that big boy.
She's a bad girl, David.
How did that happen?
Get on top of the guy and they'll do a lap dance.
And I love me a big guy that likes a sub.
She's a bad girl, David.
Oh, my God. It was amazing. What an experience.
That's nasty, stinky Paul Pierce.
Curse, cousin.
David, excuse me, my bad.
They've won.
Joe tweets, DA, it's actually not true. Portland has great strip clubs. I mean, there's an NBA team there. That's a good point. 46 minutes past the hour here on the DA Show. Coming up next hour, Charles Davis will add some class to the proceedings here for the NFL on Fox. Also, Kay Adams will join us from Good Morning Football on NFL Network. But first, your best audio of the day.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Well, as we all know, it's never going to be easy in Phoenix Suns land. They've been one of the worst teams in the NBA for a long time, but they are driving local fans and sports talk hosts insane after yet another loss by the Suns. Here's John Gambadoro on Arizona Sports 98.7 exploding.
And this guy, this slow white guy, comes crawling in just right in between all you. Excuse me. Oh, thank you. Take the ball. I'm going to dunk it. 28-5. 28-5. Oh, my God. Like, how do you? You should have left the court right there. I should have called a timeout and came back with nobody. Because nobody is better than the five they had on the court. Nobody! I would have rather played no one. Four guys staring at the basket. He missed the shot. Grab the freaking rebound. 2 minutes left in the first quarter. You're losing 25-5. Grab a rebound.
Could you imagine being that upset over a 4-24 Phoenix Suns team? I mean, it's only December, man. It's going to only get worse. And it's been worse since Barkley left town. I don't know why. I give Gambadoro so much credit there. I can't believe you could even care about a team like that anymore. But I guess the Cardinals stink. Diamondbacks are borderline playoff team, but they just traded Paul Goldschmidt.
But you got to remember, Suns fans had some mild expectations with Devin Booker that they take the next step this year.
DeAndre Ayton, Devin Booker.
Not happening.
How are the Coyotes doing?
They're terrible, too.
I would have rather played no one. Four guys.
So there is no good sports right now in the desert. I mean, you got to just, I guess, Herm Edwards, yeah. Arizona State Sun Devils.
Herm Edwards, that was your big win this year.
They're playing the Las Vegas Bowl coming up on Saturday, one of the first bowl games.
Got to get Hugh Freeze's pick tomorrow on it.
Fresno State laying four.
You're helping Hugh with the pick, aren't you?
No, I'm not. I was just looking ahead at Saturday's games because I'm like, finally, college football is back. I say finally. I mean, we had Army-Navy on Saturday, but I love the bowl season, so I started looking at, okay, who's favorite, and I'm like, wow, Arizona State's playing in the Las Vegas Bowl and is an underdog.
Mountain West champs. Fresno went big onto that blue turf, won that game in overtime. Never doubt the heart of a champion.
28-5!
So the Suns are a disaster. They're 4-24, the worst team in basketball. And it's driving everybody insane, apparently. Kawhi Leonard, I like that Kawhi Leonard has gone to Toronto and seemingly become more comfortable in his own skin. I mean, we had that funny laugh earlier in the season. It was a little awkward, but he was showing some personality. Kawhi Leonard, you know, seemingly is kind of growing into the role of being a leader. I think he's opened up. He's been more casual. He's been more conversational. I think we've seen more of Kawhi Leonard's personality in Toronto than he was in San Antonio. And maybe he's just starting to grow into himself a little bit. I mean, you can now ask him questions that are not even basketball related and get a really cool, deep answer out of Kawhi Leonard, which I appreciate. This is a guy that is no longer guarded and defensive. You know, he's really opening up. Like, this is the holidays, and it's great to just see him kind of wax poetic about what the holidays mean to him and that type of stuff.
So, Merry Christmas. Can you talk about your favorite Christmas moment?
Not right now.
Not right now.
Huh. Well, that didn't go well. The journalist says, Merry Christmas. Can you talk about your favorite Christmas moment? And Kawhi Leonard says, not right now.
Not right now.
Not right now.
Not right now. Now, if you come back to me like on Christmas Eve, maybe tomorrow around lunch, but right now I'm just not thinking about Christmas. I haven't done my shopping yet. I blew through Cyber Monday. I'm bummed about that. Now it's all kind of, I can't think about Christmas right now, so maybe we can do this at a different time, okay? Who has ever been asked about Christmas and said, not right now?
Not right now.
Not right now.
I mean, especially in December. It's only like, what, 14 days away or something. It was like 2 weeks away. If you asked Kawhi Leonard about Christmas in July, all right, maybe. Hey, man, not right now. Like, let's at least get the lights up on trees and stuff like that. Kawhi's just like, no, you can never really ask me about Christmas. I'll never be ready for it.
Not right now.
Not right now.
And finally, Jason LaConfora, NFL insider for CBS, does a contentious interview on 1010XL in Jacksonville when he has reported that Tom Coughlin perhaps is thinking about coming back down and coaching from the booth down to the sideline of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
And you said you give a percentage. You just kind of said, I think that he may go back to the sideline based on people who I've talked to. Did anybody clearly say Tom is going to go back to the sideline?
I don't think he's made the decision, but if you've got a crystal ball, you could look into it, and maybe you could do the interview. Maybe interview yourself.
I'm just not going to do deductive reasoning until I know it.
You can call it whatever you want to call it. I call it reporting.
I've been covering this team since 1995. Tom doesn't let anything leak inside that building. You'd agree with that?
I'm not going to get into. Are we going to talk about the situation, or are you going to try sources?
All I'm trying to say is that just wondering where you get that type of information, and my point is that it's not coming out of that building.
You have no idea where it's coming from.
Well, neither do you. I mean, it's not coming from that building.
I don't know who I talk to.
I think you make a lot of stuff up, Jason. I think that's
really?
How you
okay.
get
well, here,
a lot of clicks.
Here's what I think.
You make
you
a lot of stuff up.
Number.
I can lose your phone number. All right, well, there he goes. Jason LaConfora.
When sports talk goes terribly, horribly wrong. Sunday, speaking of CBS, it's an NFL Sunday doubleheader, and it's all about the playoffs. Miami takes on Minnesota, then a huge game with huge freeze, and two teams fighting to win their divisions. New England collides with Pittsburgh. The day kicks off at the NFL today, powered by Ram at 12 Eastern, 9 Pacific, only on CBS.
CBS Spectacular, yeah!
MRS. He's going to have an aneurysm. Me and Bilotti love it. You know, with LaConfora, the guy breaks massive NFL stories essentially every week. Now, could some of it be conjecture from somebody that he spoke to? I suppose. But saying I'm not going to do deductive reasoning or who are your sources, you're not getting it from the Jaguars. Number one, JLC is not going to say where his sources came from publicly. Number two, if he's reporting that somebody close to Tom Coughlin thinks that Tom Coughlin could go into coaching again, I think that's a reasonable report without saying Tom Coughlin's definitely coming back. Now, If he is reporting without a shadow of a doubt that Coughlin's coming back and Coughlin doesn't, okay. But what JLC is reporting is people close to Coughlin think that he's considering coming back. That's not a black and white report that I think you could say is true or false. Unless Coughlin came out and said, I'm not thinking about it, this report is false, but he's not going to do that. So I just think that attacking Jason's story is a little bit misguided here. He's not reporting it's definitely happening. He's reporting he's considering it. And that could be just 1% consideration. When we come back, Charles Davis from the NFL on Fox.